Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen and I'm pleased to be joined this evening by Ashwini, who we met, I guess it was nearly 2 years ago when she did a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat with us here at the monastery. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. Ashwini is probably best known recently as the co-creator of the What You Practice retreat with Sherry in this last year, and her business background along with her love of practice has her being the perfect person to assist us with some organizational changes that we've been doing in this last year. And so Ashwini's joined us tonight to talk about the Personal Development Action Plan, which she brings to us from her business background, and we're transforming into the Practice Deepening Action Plan. So welcome, Ashwini.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me.
So I thought maybe we could just start out by talking about what is the practice Practice Deepening Action Plan.
So, you know, at the end of every year, just to set up what you're going to do next year, we often look at what has been our commitment in the past year and then look forward to what we're going to do in the coming year. So the Practice Deepening Action Plan is really a structured process that we're going to be running so that we as a Sangha, as a community, can actually look at what we're going to do to deepen our own practice, to basically support each other in the practice process, and actually look at practice itself and see how we're going to continue to support practice continuing in the world. So it's basically a facilitated process that everyone in the Sangha gets to participate in order to make their plan or commitment for next year.
So, you know, one of the things that's neat about it is in years past, a lot of people have participated in the best year yet process,
mm-hmm.
a process of setting goals, but that's really only been available to people who could be with us, a handful of people who could be with us in person to do that. And what's really exciting about this process is that it's going to be available to everyone in the entire Sangha.
Exactly, and I think that a lot of people do best year yet for all parts of their lives, and I think that this particular plan is very much focused on practice.
Yeah. And so I wonder if you might tell us kind of what the elements of the plan are.
Oh, absolutely. So I think, you know, when we started the process to see how we could all engage and what the focus for practice is going forward, I think one of the things that we came up with is really we all practice and we are transformed by our practice, and this practice has offered so much, and for some people like me, you know, and it's offered me my life. And so how do we make sure that we engage together for this practice to continue in the world? And the way in which practice continues is if there are more people who are transformed by practice. And so we're all evidence of the possibility that possibility of what practice represents. And because we've benefited from this practice and we become sort of the holy order that makes it possible for everyone else who are approaching this path to be part of that community as well. So and we have a symbiotic relationship with the monastery, right? The monastery supports us, the practice supports us, and therefore we support the practice. So how do you bring all of those elements together in the deepening practice plan is what the process is going to be about. So the first step is a video workshop, the first live video workshop that we're going to do with Sherry, and we're inviting Sangha from everywhere to participate in this video workshop. And the focus of the video workshop will be the guide offering a perspective on the journey that we're on. And why is that journey important? And what's our commitment to that journey? And that's going to be on Jan 29th. And it's going to be followed by a radio show, a special show that's going to be for 2 hours between 4 and 6 p.m. And there, we're actually going to do a fun process of introducing all the ways in which people can practice, all the practice opportunities, some of the new programs that we're coming up with, so people could call in and share their experiences or ask questions about how to engage with practice. And then finally, we're going to do a month-long email class with Sherry in June, and people will be facilitated through a process of looking at what they accomplished last year? What do they want to do this year? What practice opportunities are they want to commit to? How are they going to support themselves? How are we going to support each other? And how are we going to support the monastery? And it will end in the filing of a practice plan, right? That's the commitment that we keep. And for people who are making that commitment to the monastery and to practice, it's going to be a year-long support program as well. So people get matched up with facilitators, and they could call in for support once a month for the entire year that we're doing this plan.
Oh, that's phenomenal. So it's so really the video workshop will be the foundation where Sherry will address the entire Sangha of laying the groundwork for what we're doing here. The radio show follows that up with people being able to call in with questions, what they're seeing about what came up in the video workshop, and really allowing the organization to lay out what are some of the new components, what are the things that we're carrying forward from before, what are some of the new programs that we're introducing, so people can begin to get a sense of what's going to be available to them in deepening their practice in 2012. And then the email class will be a chance to really walk through in the way that the Best Year Yet workshop is a day-long sort of process to walk through and create the plan, but this is a month-long email, or a three-week email class, I guess it is, to walk through that process of doing that with the support of the guide.
That's right, exactly. And then not only just the email class, right, but an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
You know, the support that the email class provides gives a structure for looking at what's going on and being supported through the process. And we want to duplicate that with the call-in for support on a monthly basis so that people actually feel supported in the process.
Yeah, I love that element of adding the, you know, so there you filed your plan at the end of the email class, and then throughout the year there's a way to touch back in with other Sangha. How is it going? You know, what's really working? What are the pitfalls? What are you running up against? And as always in everything we do as a Sangha, that's such a way to support each other in this case, deepening our practice.
That's right. And I think the cool part, or sort of a little bit of the shift in orientation, right, Jen, is, you know, the monastery has always been the symbol. The monastery and the guide has been the symbol of the steward of practice, right? They represent it. They give us the guidelines. And I think this is the first step in looking at how we're also the stewards, not just of our own practice, but of practice continuing as well. And so how do we take responsibility? Because that's what stewardship is about. How do we take responsibility for our own practice? And practice with a small p there, and then practice with the capital P, right? That is the practice that we all love and that has transformed our lives to such an extent. How do we take on the stewardship of practice itself and make sure that it continues?
You know, and the real beauty of that is that in that is the transformation each of us is seeking. In taking that step of stepping forward and realizing this is not just something I benefited from, but this is mine in a sense, this is ours. And in stepping forward to take responsibility for stewarding it in the world in that way, that's where that really deep transformation happens. I know Sherry often talks about, yes, in practice, one of the things that happens is that all these little parts of ourselves who have been ignored for years and years get their needs met and they get the unconditional love they've always wanted. And the real transformation is who we must become in order to provide that for them.
Exactly. And so I, just to reflect what you said, we have to become what practice is, and the process of transformation is the practice itself, right? Because in looking at anything that we do, what we do just is the content that allows us to see what causes us to suffer, and we drop that.
Yep.
Right, so it's just beautifully recursive and symbiotic,
yes,
in every way you look at it.
It is, and it's just, it really moves me as we're talking about it to realize that the only reason we are in this, you know, on this cusp of this year of deepening practice is this incredible year and everything else that's come before that, that's allowed the Sangha to be in a place to be ready for that, you know, especially the recording and listening work, the work of the TTFG classes, Time to Feel Good email classes, the What You Practice retreats that have just happened. They've all brought the Sangha, it feels like, to a place where we're ready for this really big next revolutionary step.
Yep, and it's going to be so fun. We've got some new programs that we're coming up with, and can't wait to talk about that at some point. And we're launching just, you know, different ways in which we can all engage together to demonstrate how we take ownership, right? It's not just the practice opportunities that we choose to participate in, but volunteer opportunities and service with the Africa Project, and ways in which people are invited to take ownership of all the things that we do under the umbrella of practice.
Yeah, it's quite holistic, and we've had so much fun putting it together. So I really want to put, you know, we've got to turn it over to Michael in a minute, but I want to put a plug in for people to join us on January 29th and be with Sherry, be with, you know, the whole Sangha as we, you know, embark on this exciting journey, because there really is so much to tell and so many fun things to share. So I hope people will really mark their calendars and join us for that, and then the radio show and the email class following.
Yeah, and I think, Jen, we'll start to put the details out slowly, but the registration for the video shop will open by the end of this week.
Okay, excellent. So it's not live yet, so I think there's information about it on the web, but the registration isn't live, but it will be, it sounds like, by the end of the week. So keep tuning in, and I'm sure we'll be sending out notifications when that goes live and that sort of thing, so people can watch their email inbox for that.
Absolutely. May I say one more thing, Jen?
Yes, please.
Just that, you know, it's a space. The technology allows us to have lots of people, but we really request people who can make it to make the commitment and join and register, because we do have a limited number of spots. So if you sign up, that means your spot is not available to anyone else.
Yeah.
And so just to be thoughtful about that.
Yeah, and sign up early.
Yeah, and sign up early.
Yeah. Ashwini, a deep bow of gassho to you for being on tonight and for all the very many gifts that you're bringing to practice. Thank you for being on.
Thanks, Jen.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Well, that was a stunner.
Wasn't that a stunner? I'm telling you. 2012. We just don't want to miss it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm feeling supported already.
I know. And I think a lot of the excitement got communicated in that conversation, and there is a lot of excitement going on with every aspect of this. It's just it feels like an expansion for Sangha and with Sangha that, as Ashwini was saying, or Jen was saying, one of those gals was saying, you know, that everything that we've been doing has been preparing us for being able to take this next step as a Sangha. And we're ready, and it's fun.
It is fun. It's great. And I love the idea of taking responsibility for ourselves and the practice. And
yes,
what I hear is really... representing practice and being practice and all that entails.
Yeah, making sure that practice is around for the next generation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In every sense, you know, there's for us, you know, for you, say, for instance, you know, with having a family and so very, very aware of the next generation. Then there's just the next generation of folks who are, as Ashwini said, approaching, quoting the Daily Recollection, approaching this holy path. You know, there are folks out there getting ready to have their lives transformed, whether they know it or not, and we want to make sure that when they are ready, there's a practice ready for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a big responsibility, and it's a joyous responsibility.
Yes, I can see that. Mm-hmm. That the life raft that was there for me will be available for the next person.
Precisely. That's such a great image. You know, we want to keep that raft in pristine order, so that it is available for the next person. That's a great image.
Great. Great. Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Andrea calling.
Hello, Andrea.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, it's great to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been. What's going on?
Well, I've been doing the email class, the December email class.
Good.
And, yeah, and so I took a a behavior I'd like to change.
Mm-hmm.
And worked with that a little bit. And what the behavior is reaching out to people.
Uh-huh.
And so what I noticed is fear coming up around talking to other people and not knowing what to say and awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked my mentor what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of felt a lot of confusion and unclarity and what should I do. And so the mentor told me to call the radio show.
Very good, huh? That mentor. So let me get a reality check here, okay? Does it seem to you that that this group of people continuing on into December, now I don't know what happened to the people who didn't stay with us, but continuing on into December is kind of reaching new depths and heights in their awareness?
I sure hope so.
Well, I don't know if you're reading the responses, but they're extraordinary. I mean, each... You know, I'll read what somebody has written, and it's just oh, my God, thank you. You know, that is so insightful. That is such great wisdom. That's really brilliant. And it's true. I mean, just person after person after person. And, of course, what they're mostly doing is reporting on their relationship with the mentor and what the mentor is doing with them and what they're doing with the mentor And the information that's coming from them is just stunning. So it's a very, very happy sort of process. So here's my take on that, right? It seems to me that if you, as the person reaching out, if you are as focused as you can be on simply being present with the person that you're with, all will be well.
And when you say person I'm with, is that internal or external or both?
it's both, but in this case, since you're involved with someone external, let your primary focus be on them. So and what I mean by that is that there you are coming from a place of, well, why do you want to be with people? Let's establish that first. Why do you want to reach out to people?
Well, I guess because I feel like I kind of get isolated, and I definitely feel like I'm in my comfort zone by not reaching out to other people, and I guess that's kind of what I feel like. I'd like to have a larger life.
Okay, and so the person that you're interacting with is representing for you a larger life. So,
yeah.
not so engaged in a life of the illusion of separation, but actually in connection with other human beings.
Yeah, that's what I want, connection.
Yeah, connection. Okay, so if your attention is on the other person, in other words, if you are focused on being interested in them, really seeing them, really hearing them, being interested in what they are saying, doing, are all about. Concerned for their comfort, their ease, their well-being in their interactions with you, it will probably go well. If your attention goes to the voices in your head telling you that you're self-conscious, it's awkward, you don't know what to say, that wasn't the right thing to say, then that's going to be uncomfortable for both of you.
Yeah.
Can you get a sense of that?
I do. And what I'm really looking at, you know, we were just talking earlier about the mentor. And
uh-huh.
So I've been really looking at, you know, at the mentor, and I'm trying to come up with a way to mentor myself through that. And because I think there's a little scared 5-year-old in there, and I guess that's what I'm
yes.
trying
so
to get.
You want to be in relationship with that frightened 5-year-old. So that's kind of job one of this relationship thing, right? So you're working with her to mentor her, to coach her, to, you know, be the parent to her that she didn't have, and help her toward being able to be with other people and be comfortable. Then you take her by the hand, and you go out, and you engage with other people. So instead of becoming a scared 5-year-old who's going to try to go out, you know, that's like being on your own going to kindergarten or something, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to be her. You want to be nurturing, mentoring, caring for her as she accompanies you to go out and interact with other people. So that brings up the next phase of it. Just about everybody, I suspect, has the equivalent of a frightened 5-year-old, especially when it comes to socializing and being around other people. You know, an awful lot of people are afraid of other people, okay, because other people is where everybody got their trauma. So if you are aware of that with other people, so you're going to be in a conversation with someone you don't know, and you imagine that they also have a frightened 5-year-old, and you are energetically, emotionally with them the way you are with that part of yourself, the same level of kindness, gentleness, compassion, understanding that you have with that frightened part of yourself, I think it'll go well.
Yeah.
Are you with me on that one?
I am. I think a lot of it for me is, I think what hinders me the most is when this 5-year-old shows up, what ends up showing up is this exasperated mother who doesn't want to deal with the 5-year-old, kind of like self-hate. And I am aware enough to see that happening. And then it's like she's preventing the mentor from coming in.
Yes. Well, and of course, now I'm going to project that that's not an exasperated mother at all.
It's probably self-hate.
It is self-hate. It's karmic conditioning. It's what's there to keep this karma in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's where we sidestep that and just go directly to the relationship with the child, with the mentor, with the child, putting the child and the mentor together, you know, that whole process. Because, go ahead.
If the self-hate shows up, just kind of have this huge willingness to to smash it to bits and just drop it and then have the mentor come in, is that?
Yes, and of course, you know, what we're practicing all the time is just ignoring it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I'll record and listen around that. Hello?
Sherry, are you there?
Hello.
Sherry, Andrea, is that right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Sherry, are you there? Are you there? Sherry, are you there? Andrea, I'm going to put you on a pause here for a second and see if we can get Sherry back on the line.
Sure.
Sherry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. We lost you. We lost you for a second there.
Oh, everybody else was there but me?
Yes, yes, and now
wow.
You're here. And now Andrea's back. Andrea, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh. Such an odd feeling, isn't it? So the last thing I heard me say was, the child is focused on compassion. Compassion is focused on the child. The bully might be over there trying to do whatever it's doing, but nobody's attending to it.
I see.
And without attention, of course, it can't continue to exist.
Okay, so even though there's this real great pull, just doing the best I can to drop that and to focus my attention elsewhere.
That's right. That's right. And on the small child who needs to be saved is always a good place to focus the attention.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm? Okay, I will practice around that, Sherry.
Good. And then let me know.
Yeah, I will. And thank you so much. And thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Pasha from San Francisco.
Well, good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good, good. What's going on?
I'm working lately with a core issue of who I am, and there is there is a part of me who believes that I'm worthy. As long as I'm doing my work. So there's a lot of investment into performing my job, and when I'm faced with a situation when I can't, for some reason, perform my job, then I get a lot of voices saying, well, why, and you know, what should I do, and there is a part of me goes into and starts to figure out, how to solve the situation.
Shall I jump
yes.
in and
okay
all right well I, now if the first place to me to look is that doing is the realm of karmic conditioning
yes.
So it always is talking to people about doing. So in the email class, you know, with the time to feel good, the main voice of resistance that people hear and believe is, I'm too busy. I don't have enough time. There's too much to do. And it's for a lot of people for a long time, of course, it's a completely unexamined belief. So they just consider that to be true. Now, when people start practicing and really looking at it, we begin to see holes in that. But it's such an ingrained belief. And the reason that there's so much pressure to believe that is that as long as you're doing, you're in the world of duality. You're in the world of karmic conditioning. So there's in doing, there's a constant conversation about should I, shouldn't I? Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this important? Should I do it now? Should I do it later? How did I do that? Did I do it well? Did I not do it well? Do they like it? Do they not like it? It just plunges a person into a second-by-second relationship with the voices of conditioned mind. Yeah?
Yes.
So, go ahead.
Well, and especially when the external people confirm kind of internal belief that I'm measured by what I do at my work, then it becomes easier to it becomes more believable for some part of me to try to go solve it, trying to do something different, trying to overdo it.
Yes. So now, you know, I'm fond of making this statement that this, we live in an egocentric, karmically conditioned society. And we can, it, you know, that can sound judgmental, or we can just look around and see that it's true. So every kind of belief that supports self-hate is culturally encouraged. So people will work themselves to death doing something that actually the world doesn't need at all. Yeah? Do you know what I mean by that?
Well, not exactly. I mean, the fact I'm doing the job that the world doesn't need.
Well,
I mean,
for instance, I would say that somebody working for a company that, let's just do gross examples, okay? A company that makes arms.
Yes.
And they are completely devoted to that. They eat and sleep and breathe that job. Okay?
Yes.
They'll sacrifice their health. They're completely stressed. They eat junk food. They don't get enough sleep. They drink too much because to try to get away from the stress. Okay? So the content of the job doesn't have anything to do with people being driven in that way. So very few people stop actually and say, now, really, why am I doing this? Okay? The beliefs are so deep that the way to work hard is to be stressed, that important people are really busy. You know, just in fact, if you're not urgent and anxious, you're not really working as hard as you could be. You know, silly stuff that when we stop and look at it, it doesn't even make sense. Yeah?
Yes.
So if I'm paying you to do a job, then, of course, I want you to believe all that stuff, and I want, you know, it's fine with me that you work yourself to the point of whatever if my bottom line is invested in your performance.
Yes.
Yeah? So there's
yeah.
really there's no mystery to all of it. The mysterious part to me is that that we're so willing to continue to believe it. And we all know a lot of people who are sick, and their health is being destroyed. They have anxiety stuff. They have every kind of thing in the world, and they still go to work as if their life depended upon it, rather than realizing that actually this is killing me.
Yes, but admitting this is killing me is hard. For someone who is measuring that what he's doing making him okay, if I don't hold my job, then I'm not a good husband. And
Now wait. Okay. So I just laid out a scenario wherein egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate can ruin a person's life.
Yes.
Okay. And none of that has anything to do with doing a good job. So it would be possible. So what I'm suggesting is, of course, what's judging you and comparing and holding standards and criticizing you is karmic conditioning and self-hate. It's just using the job as a way to do that because you'll believe it. It can also use being a good husband because you'll believe that, or being a good father because it can torture you over that. But all of those comparisons and standards don't have anything to do with doing a good job or being a good husband or being a good father. They're just ways you're being tortured. Does that seem so to you?
Yes. Well, of course. I mean, I even had a mental recordings saying me, you know, those stuff. It's nonsense to believe. And I listened to those recordings, and it gets, you know, I get relaxed for some time. And I come back to Lightroom and everything moves fine. And then I come back to my job, and somehow I sunk back to that, you know, struggling world of the darkroom.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, really what we're talking about is what we're up against everywhere, right? That's a place where it can get you. And
yeah.
So that's the place where you have to work harder not to let it.
Yes.
Yeah? So it does that with each one of us. It knows what our weaknesses are. It knows what we'll believe, what we'll go for, what we'll suffer over. And that's the thing it's going to go after us with. So, you know, possibly that could be a place of actually finding great joy in that what you could practice is this sort of a koan. How can you be the best employee while being the happiest employee? How can you do the best job and be the happiest worker?
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah, that's kind of it, isn't it?
Yes. Starting with the happiest place and doing the best I can, and well, yeah, there is a fear coming up of losing a job.
And I'll tell you who that fear belongs to. That belongs to karmic conditioning. Because, you know, Pasha, here's the deal. Again, we all know the person who is, let's just stay in the work setting, right? They're so focused on doing a good job. Now, all this has to be in quotes, right? What the story they're living in is, I'm doing a good job. I'm trying to do a good job. And they're miserable to be around. They're grumpy, cranky. They're unpleasant, all in pursuit of them doing a good job. So there's no awareness of anybody around them or how somebody else feels or how they're affecting people. It's all about them doing a good job.
Yeah,
and nobody likes to be around them. And in fact, I don't know about you, but after a while, I don't much care if they're doing a good job. I just don't want to be around them.
Yes.
And we forget that. You know, we forget that when those voices get a hold of us and start in with, you have to, you better if you don't.
Yes. Great. Thank you so much. This is this will be a nice piece to work on.
Yes. So you're going to now be the happiest, best worker.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. I'm eager to hear how it goes.
All right. I'll let
thanks.
You know.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Good night.
See you soon. Good night.
All right.
Good night, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we will be right back.
All right.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving on. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael, this is Jen.
Hey!
Hey,
how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Not much. I'm just calling in for my commitment to call. And I'm noticing, I read your blog recently and was just really looking at that a lot. I had both sugar and upset today and noticed how quickly it felt like I wasn't feeling so great. And so I'm just kind of aware of that and looking at really taking care of myself now.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's not a mystery, actually, or not surprising, I guess would be a better way to say it, that this time of year is such a difficult one for people physically, because
yeah.
that's what the whole thing is, stress and sugar. You know, the immune system has to just be taking a beating every single day. And then combine that with the fact that, you know, the noble approach is no matter how sick you are, you go to work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, yeah, it's a rough deal for the poor body.
Absolutely, yes. I appreciated the way you just laid it out in the blog because, you know, of course it makes sense, but I think just to have that pointed out again, like, well, of course, you know, these things attack the immune system and to rest. And yeah, it was just helpful. And even the way that you just said it now, like, yep, this month is just a whole lot of everything that's probably not so supportive. So just to be looking at things that are supportive. So, you know,
yeah.
I was kind of went, you know, conditioning was saying, oh, you don't feel so great. You should just go to bed early. And then I was like, ooh, I think, you know, I'm going to make the call and then go to bed early. So,
Yeah. Go to bed early tonight when you've committed to call into the radio show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always fun to watch, like, how it suddenly really cares about me in the time that I'm supposed to call the radio show.
Yeah. You know, that back to the stress and the sugar and that whole thing. I look a lot at, you know, of course, I look a lot at how people get bamboozled by karmic conditioning and self-hate, and that celebrating, it usually involves things that are harmful.
Yes, yeah.
So,
eating, stuff that's
yeah.
not good, yeah.
Right, well, and just the number of creatures that die for these celebrations, you know, whether you're looking at animals or trees or whatever it is, and then that celebration is eating too much, drinking too much, and spending too much money.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are meant to feel bad because they're not having a good time.
Yeah.
So, you know, here, everywhere you go, there's, you know, mounds of candy and cookies and that sort of thing. And then people get beaten up for eating junk, for gaining weight, for, you know, it's just sad. And I think my wish, of course, is that as a nation, we'll just start here, you know, people would go, wait a minute, what are we doing? This is not a way to celebrate. Let's stop doing this, and figure out. I mean, they don't even have to celebrate the way I think people would enjoy celebrating. Just if everybody would figure out for themselves what would really feel celebratory on every level. What would take care of body, mind, emotion, spirit, and bring joy to that, you know, to the being,
mm-hmm.
and then do that.
It sure makes a lot of sense, huh? Yes,
it does. I don't think it's going to catch on, though. But you know, I think it's important for us to consider it anyway.
Absolutely.
It,
who knows? We can
turn
it off and get a couple other people on board, and you never know what will spread. So yeah.
Precisely. As I'm fond of pointing out, I can well remember when there were not even smoking sections,
yeah.
and when decaf coffee came in a little packet So, you know, if we've come that far in those areas, we can actually accomplish quite a lot. But the thing that, to me, that it matters is it, when we consider it for ourselves, we can make the change for one person. And that's really the person we're most affected by. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for all of that. It feels like a really nice support knowing that there is, you know, lots of sugar and stress and all of these things. It is so helpful to look at, you know, gosh, who like the heart doesn't really want that at all, mm-hmm. but there is so much societal stuff, and then conditioning can just go right into it of like, oh yeah, it's the holidays, that will feel great, and you know, all of those
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah. And in the email class, you know, reading where people are just dreading it,
yeah.
you know, just miserable. God, I want to have fun, but it never is, and it's so hard, and I don't want to, and what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I just enjoy this? And of course, the piece that we don't have is, well, maybe it's not enjoyable. Maybe there's anything wrong with you. Maybe this is just actually not a good time.
Yeah, the whole thing, like you said, is kind of laid out to not necessarily set us up for much
yeah.
that's helpful. Yeah.
Especially when something's waiting to beat you up after, you know, you do all of the things that it's been talking you into doing.
Yeah,
it's painful. It really is painful. To me, it's sad, but yeah.
Yes. Well, I am glad that we have these ways to get together and consider other possibilities. So thank you for that so much.
You're very welcome. So now you get to go to bed.
Now I'm going to go to bed, but I didn't listen to that conditioned voice that said taking care of me would be not to call the show. So that's good news.
That is very good. So now you can go to bed just feeling good.
Absolutely. Thank you
yeah.
so much. Happy
You're
holidays
so welcome.
To you.
Happy holidays to you. Good night.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Megan from Maryland.
Hello, Megan.
Hi. I put the call on the calendar today. Usually I just call when I'm, like, blissfully in the light room, and so I thought it would be fun to put it on the calendar. And conditioning almost talked me out of it. And then I got the tweet that came in about how meeting commitments is so relaxing. And so I said, well,
there, I'll relax. Thank you very much. Now, I just want to remark on something that you said, and that
yep.
is that you usually only call in when you're blissfully happy. Was that what it was? Blissfully in the light room.
Yeah, because then the voices, I don't even hear them, the ones that say, oh, you can't call, you have to put the kids to bed, and they're going to interrupt you and whatever.
That's amazing. I'm so used to, you know, I only practice when I'm so miserable I've run out of every other option. So that's quite, that's the other side of the deal. That's very nice to consider. You practice when you're blissfully in the light room.
Oh, that's all I want to do.
Yeah. Wow. Good. I just wanted to underline that because, you know, that's a good thing for us all to remember. When I'm blissfully in the light room, I want to connect with Sangha and practice and celebrate. Mm-hmm.
I think you said something about that last week, that when you're in the dark room, meditation is sort of like a please, and when you're in the light room, it's like a thank you.
I do recall that. Yes. That's true, isn't it?
It is true.
That's true. And the Sangha part of it, you know, starting off, Ashwini and Jen were talking about 2012 and the year of deepening practice. And, you know, when we're miserable, we can reach out to Sangha as kind of a life raft or that sort of thing, a safety net or parachute or whatever image we want. And then when things are going well, we reach out to Sangha to be the support for anybody else who might need a parachute or a life raft.
So it's that same kind of principle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's always, this is that image that I love so much about the Canada geese, you know, the way they fly. One is in front of the V, and it's obviously very strong, and it's leading the pack, and everybody is kind of fanned out behind that leader, and then the leader gets tired and goes to the back of the line, and the next one has been resting a little bit and takes its place at the front. That's kind of like Sangha too.
It's so wonderful. I can't believe how many years I sort of practiced by myself. I mean, 15 years I practiced by myself. And Well, no, I practiced with conditioning. I got a lot of guidance about why I couldn't be part of that group, or why, you know, that you're not ready for that, or they are, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And you had a very forceful teacher, right? Ego.
I did.
Yeah.
And I listened very carefully.
Yeah.
I was very obedient.
Yeah, I trained in that tradition as well. Yeah, probably we all did, actually, at one point or another.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's no wonder, is it, that people think practice is hard. Because with that teacher and that sangha, it
it's
is
not fun.
Hard. Yeah.
It was not a good time.
Mm-mm. No. And then to get to the place of realizing, wow, that had nothing to do with practice.
Right.
Yeah. Especially, you know, when we look back at just about any, well, let's just stick with Buddhism, although, you know, I throw Jesus in this mix. There's all this kindness and compassion and caring and support and that sort of thing. And then karmic conditioning gets hold of those messages and turns them into hateful shoulds and punishment. And we can be so used to being beaten up that we don't even see that there's kind of a something amiss in that whole process. You know, we don't stop and say, now, really, can I picture that coming out of the Buddha's mouth? You know, can I imagine that someone so awakened, so filled with compassion, would say that kind of cruel, hurtful thing to anybody? But we're identified enough that it doesn't occur to us to question that.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, I actually had all this compassion for people in organized religions who are clearly, you know, have self-hate as a strong companion. And they may be, you know, they're trying to do the right thing, and they're trying to help people or whatever, whatever they got into religious service, and, you know, they just have self-hate leading the way for them.
Yeah. Well, and just to recognize that, right? That when we look at somebody and think, wow, that doesn't feel good, to know that it's not the person, it's what has a hold of them.
Yeah.
It's what they're believing, what they're caught in, what they're being punished and tortured by. That's what's doing the speaking, not that human being.
Yeah, and you can imagine that conditioning could really dig into, like, you know, you're representing God, and your job is so important, so you really have to do it right. You really have to make sure the sinners understand, or whatever it is in their particular.
Mm-hmm.
So
to realize that the person is still coming from a place of goodness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you
so much.
Oh,
I was
just
going to say my timer went off, so I'm gonna yield the floor.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank
you.
Have
a lovely whatever, holiday season or whatever. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Megan. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Mary Jane from San Francisco.
Hello, Mary Jane.
Hello.
What's going on?
Oh, thank you so much for having this show. I was devouring this bag of pretzels while I was waiting, and it was just like, okay, you know when you just, you know you're in it, but there's some part of you that wants to stay in it? Or
yes.
And said mentor, okay, what, can you help me out? And it was just like, just look out the window, you know? It was like, it wasn't anything big, but it was just, okay. And that's what's helping me a lot is when I get caught in it, I know that life is better outside of, you know, snarfing down a bag of pretzels.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, people get so kind of twisted up about, well, what do I turn my attention to? And what you just made very clear is anything. You know, I mean, out the window would be very good. There's a larger vista out there. There's a world beyond this little tiny box that conditioned mind wants to put me in and keep me in. And so just to focus on that, there are lights out there. And that's enough of a break for conditioning to lose its grip for just long enough that we have a chance of getting our heads above water. That's very helpful. And the other thing that you said that is helpful, I think, in practice and interesting, is that place when you're in it and you know you're in it and you're still in it.
Well, I'm often in it and I'm trying to get out of it, but there's sometimes when I'm in it and there's some satisfaction, you know, from that.
Yes. Shall I tell you what that is? Or do you know?
Little one being taken of, or getting, thinking she's getting her needs met.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes. And I would say I think if this isn't for 2012, it's definitely for 2013. We have to turn our attention to this in practice. And that is that I would suggest that what you had an opportunity to do in that situation that you described is to feel what it feels like when you're not there, but ego is. Because when something arises, you know, I want to, eat a bag of something that is not vegetable, therefore, unmistakably is not that good for me. And I want to. And so there's a little flicker of, you know, well, but this isn't good for you. I don't care. I want to. It's what I want. And there is the rationalization is that this is taking care of me. This is, this is just what I want, okay? Can I just have what I want? And to realize that that's not me. It sounds like me. I think it's me, I've believed it's me, but it's not me. It's egocentric karmic conditioning, and it has completely taken over, except that as you described, there's awareness there. So previously, it would have just taken me over, and there would have been no awareness of a takeover at all. There wouldn't be that little voice that says, you know, this is really not good for you. You're not going to be happy about this later. That actually could even happen, but there would be no conscious awareness of it happening. Okay, so now you're at the place where awareness is there, and there's awareness of awareness, right? So, I mean, you know everything that's happening, and you can feel what it feels like that you've been taken over. You can feel from the inside out what that process is of, I don't care, I want this. And in that, now, of course, that's the kind of place that karmic conditioning wants you, as soon as you catch on to the fact that you're identified in that way, it wants you to get out of it. Okay? Now, it's not because it's really concerned about your well-being. It's so that you won't catch on to what's happening.
Hmm.
So what we actually want to do is stay right there and take notes. Because if you can sense the way the world looks, the attitude, that feeling of, but I'm taking care of me, the I don't care, this is what I want, that kind of sort of almost righteous, because it's not necessarily, it doesn't have the feel of a spoiled child, but of somebody who's making conscious decisions about what I want and what I'm going to do. Do you know what I'm, are you recognizing what I'm pointing at?
Yeah.
So if we can really recognize at the most subtle level when that's there, we have a chance at freedom that is brand new to anything we've ever experienced before. Because as soon as that you can feel the sensations in the body change, that the world starts looking different, there's the, you know, the set of the face, there's that, those thoughts, that internal conversation, we can go, oh, I've been taken over. And of course, the moment that occurs to you, you've popped out of the identification. It's really huge.
Can I add one? This, because lately especially, and maybe this is just something conditioning saying, but I feel like I actually spend a lot of time thinking that I'm identified. You know, just having a sense that I'm not seeing the world as beautiful as it is, you know? And so I do spend a lot of time being aware that I'm not in that heart open place. But I don't know if that might be also conditioning. It's a process, but maybe I'm noticing that I get, there tends to be this story that accompanies me that I'm caught up in it and I can't get out, usually is kind of the story. Like I'm caught in it and I can't get out, but I know I'm in it. You know, it's like I used to be unconscious, but now I'm conscious and trapped.
Yes. Okay. So this is perfect because it's the trying to get out of it that is giving giving it its power.
Okay.
So that's the place where you want to say, okay, good. Here I am in it. Let's explore it. Let's find out exactly what's going on here. So, you know, those, I don't know if you've ever run across these things called, I think we call them Chinese puzzles or something. You stick your fingers in the end of these little tubes. Yeah. And then the more you pull, the tighter it is. And the only way to get out of it is to go in the opposite direction. It's exactly the principle. So as you look for that subtle identification to explore it, you'll find you're in it less. What it's doing now is saying you're identified. Now, who knows whether you actually were. But as soon as it says it, then you turn your attention to it and you start letting it scrutinize you and give you information about your identification.
Yeah, it's like making, it's this interesting line of that it's okay to be, I'm not saying it's okay to be in conditioning, but there's nothing wrong. Like,
yes.
If you are identified, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Precisely. It means there's been a degree of takeover. And so that's what you want to get clear about. Okay, well then what is that like? How do I tell when that's going on? As soon as we, your point is the best one. As soon as we drop the, oh, this means there's something wrong with me, then it becomes a matter of seeing how all of this stuff works, which is a way more interesting place to live than trying to let it prove there's something wrong with me.
Oh,
which
so
it's very eager to do.
Yeah. I get to see it more clearly now.
Yeah. This is good, huh?
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. I'll see you soon, too, huh?
Yes, yes, definitely. I'm
right.
So looking forward to it. So thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. Sherry, I have some information.
What's that?
There's going to be no show next week due to retreat, and we'd like to encourage people to listen to an archive show.
Yes, we would.
We
would have happily done a show, but we found out last year that the internet will not support it. So an archive for everybody who can't be with us, and then be with us next year.
Yeah.
And so we'll be back on the Tuesday after that. I don't know what the date is. Do you?
January 3rd,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, good.
All
and
right.
I'll see you pretty soon, too.
Yes, I'm greatly looking forward to it.
Me too. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.